Hip-hop artist, writer, and director Boots Riley's new movie, Sorry to Bother You, has gained national attention. And as its box office numbers increase, it shines a rare spotlight on Oakland artists and filmmakers. With the commercial success of movies like Fruitvale Station, Black Panther, and Blindspotting, written and directed by Oakland natives, many are wondering what's behind this new emergence of talent from the town. Writer, photojournalist, and cultural historian Eric Arnold joins us to talk about the Oakland film explosion and its connection to the Black cultural arts movement of the 60s and 70s. So, Eric Arnold, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Oh, so good to be here.
So there's this idea happening now with the success of Fruitvale Station. We'll go back a little bit with the Black Panther, Sorry to Bother You Now, and Blindspotting, that there's this new filmmaking explosion happening in Oakland. The New York Times and the LA Times are saying Oakland is having a Hollywood moment. You say that this is not new, but a continuum. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, I mean, you could also say that Hollywood is having an Oakland moment. I think that we are definitely seeing a narrative that is shifting, and maybe it's just because of the political winds and people are hungry for alternative content. But if you really think about it, you know, Oakland has been generating national cultural movements since 1964, 1965, 1966, beginning with the Black Arts Movement, going to the Black Panther Party. And so we're really looking at the multi-generational legacy of the Black Arts Movement. And, you know, it's also a thing of the hip-hop generation coming of age. Boots Riley is a hip-hop generation filmmaker. Ryan Coogler is a hip-hop generation filmmaker. David Diggs is a hip-hop generation filmmaker.
Well, talk about the Black Arts Movement that you're saying from the 60s and the 70s and how that connects to what's happening now.
Okay, so the central idea behind the Black Arts Movement was that art and culture cannot be separated from politics. So, in other words, if you are engaged in a liberation struggle or liberation movement, that should be reflected in your art, that should be reflected in your music, in your visual art, in your spoken word, in your literature, in your theater, in your film. That's one of the central concepts of the Black Arts Movement. So this was like a very, very influential movement that started in New York, came out to Oakland very early on, was also in Atlanta and New Orleans and Chicago. And through that movement, we really saw a flourishing of Black art in a lot of different disciplines. Definitely literature, definitely spoken word, definitely theater, as well as visual art and music. And as time has gone on, that legacy has only deepened. And, you know, it's been said by Marvin X, the co-founder of the Black Arts Movement, along with Amiri Baraka, that, you know, the Black Arts Movement is basically what gave birth to hip hop. That is, you know, that's up for debate, but you can definitely see the connections that do exist between hip hop and what hip hop is really about and Black arts.
And there was a quote that I heard from you about culture needing to be used to weaponize.
Right. Right. Okay. So, you know, this kind of gets into the whole reason that we're here as Black people in America. We didn't choose to be here, but we're here. And we know how we got here, but we don't know how we're getting out of here. So in order for our very survival, we have to create culture. Our culture is completely 100% resilient, going back to the days of Congo Square, where all the different African tribes would gather, and the only common language they had was the drum. And if you really look at the Black experience in America, a through line has been the weaponizing of culture. We don't have all the guns. We don't make all the laws. We don't make all the rules. We don't make all the money. But what do we have? We have our culture.
How is it that we use it to weaponize?
Well, okay, so getting back to the film thing, Boots Riley is a perfect example, right? So, you know, here's a guy that since the early 90s has been weaponizing hip-hop as a force against capitalism. Now he's weaponizing film as a weapon against capitalism, and getting, you know, major media attention and all these reviews. And it's so interesting too to see what's coming down the pike in publications like Forbes when they're reviewing Sorry to Bother You, because, you know, Forbes is pretty much the center of capitalist thought, and they're talking about how great the movie is.
And what does that mean for a city like Oakland that is getting so much attention and that Forbes is picking up and the New York Times and LA Times?
Well, I mean, I think that these national entities are realizing something that people who have lived in and around Oakland have known for a very long time. I mean, again, we're talking about 5 decades of cultural development and evolution since the mid-60s. So there is a long history and continuum of culture coming out of here. We haven't talked about this yet, which was Spaces, the Place, and the Mac, which are kind of two extremely seminal films of the 70s that went on to influence many later generations that were both shot in Oakland. And so I think Oakland has like a certain specialness to it, a certain uniqueness to it as a flavor, as a vibe. So I think Oakland has a very special flavor that has been part of its culture for many, many years. And the rest of the country and world is discovering that right now.
So now that we have Fruitvale Station and Black Panther, Sorry to Bother You, Blindspotting, how is that affecting the film industry?
Well, I mean, all these movies, we have to note that they've all made a tremendous return on investment. I think Black Panther was the most expensive one. It maybe cost about $200 million, but it brought back $1 billion and counting. And, you know, typically Hollywood might spend $100 million to make $150 million. And all these other movies have, like, tremendous, like, return on investment. I think the opening weekend of Sorry to Bother You, it pulled in something like $4,200 per theater, you know, compared to the Whitney Houston biography, which pulled in like $275 per theater. And, you know, Fruitvale Station was made for just a few million and made something like 16 to 20 million or something like that. So all these movies are having really tremendous return on investment. So that's one way that they're changing Hollywood, is that the bottom line is undeniable. These movies make money. People want to see them. You can't say no one wants to see a black film. End of discussion there, or it should be. The other thing is that I think it sort of changes the culture of Hollywood, because when Oakland becomes known for a certain type of talent coming out of it that you can't find anywhere else, and just really has like something special to it, then that creates opportunities for other filmmakers from Oakland and the Bay Area.
Well, in 2008, the Wayans brothers were going to build a movie studio in Oakland at the Army base, but the project was dropped. How much do you think that affected Oakland being able to be put on the map in the same way that Hollywood, New York City, or Atlanta now are?
Well, we still got on the map. So I don't. Ultimately, it was just a bump, you know, a blip, a glitch. It really wasn't something that derailed us long term. 2008 was also, we were in a recession, and that recession hit California hard. When we came out of the recession, the state did away with the redevelopment agency. So a lot of the money that the city could have put into projects like the film project that was planned for that base just didn't happen. So they ended up doing something different with it.
Why do you think that people see this as a film explosion in terms of filmmakers of color coming out of Oakland?
Well, because they are, and that's the most visible part. And film is such a overwhelming medium because it's so visceral, and it really does sort of, when you see a really impressive film, you think about it after the fact. But really, if I was going to break it down, I would say it's not just film. It's connected to all of this culture and all of these disciplines that have come out of Oakland. You have to look at the hip hop of Oakland, which is independent and underground and isn't just one thing. You have to look at, you know, and when I say it's underground, I'm saying that's where it came from. But then you also look at the fact that Hammer was the first artist to sell 10 million records, and that Too Short has more gold and platinum records than any rapper in history. And, you know, digital underground had super success, and you know, hieroglyphics are probably the third most recognized logo in all of music.
And Tupac coming out of digital underground.
And Tupac, Tupac is on record, you know, saying that Oakland was where he got his game from. You know, so all of these things have happened. There's an amazing visual art scene, an amazing sort of aerosol art scene. You know, the legacy of Mike Dream, TDK, you know, TMF, all these crews that, you know, are really identified with like deep Bay Area, East Bay culture. And then we've got the movement arts too. I mean, you know, it started back in the Black Arts era with Oakland Boogaloo, and then proceeded to like hip hop dance, and now we have turf dancing, and you know, who knows what's going to come next. So to me, all of these things are not really separate. They're all kind of part of the same thing, because if you've lived in Oakland and you've been around Oakland, you've kind of been experienced, or you have experienced all of them together. And you know, these filmmakers from Oakland, all of that is in their DNA.
And how are these films creating new opportunities for other filmmakers of color?
Well, I mean, so far they've been amazingly successful. But they've also sort of injected some new mojo into film. I mean, I saw this article that was saying that Sorry to Bother You could revolutionize the comedy movie. And comedies have been around for a very, very long time. You would think that at that point you can't add any more spokes to the wheel. But people are saying that these movies can actually do that because they're coming with so many fresh ideas. I think one of the central ideas in Black Panther is the blending of tradition and technology. I just think we're seeing something fresh in these movies that we haven't seen before. And it's getting people excited, and it's giving people a reason to keep going to the movies, even in an age of digital streaming.
And what is behind it? What do you think is driving this new explosion?
You know, I think it's just creativity. I think it's just a surge of creativity. I think that, you know, also, you know, you have to be a good writer to make a good film. So Ryan Coogler co-wrote and directed Black Panther. David Diggs and Rafael Casal co-wrote and co-directed Blindspotting. Boots Riley wrote and directed Sorry to Bother You. And just the writing is fresh. You know, now maybe had these people been in L.A. their entire lives, they wouldn't be as fresh. I don't know.
So no cultural or historical event that just the eclipse?
Well, it's hard to point to just one single cultural historical event, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, because there are so many. I mean, it's like, can we just say one thing? I mean, definitely Boots was influenced by Occupy, but then his dad was a labor organizer in the 60s and 70s. You know, so it's really about a continuum. And if you look at the history of Oakland, you know, people have organized around labor issues since the 1920s, since C.L. Dellums and the Pullman Porters. So it's really not a new thing. It's a continuum of everything that's happened before.
Would you say there's more opportunity now for directors? Because there are some people might say, I've written the script years ago, I can't get it produced, that there's just something that's happening now where Black filmmakers are being taken seriously?
I mean, I think it's not just Black filmmakers, but yes, it is Black filmmakers, but also specifically Black filmmakers from Oakland, because the spotlight is on them now. Mm-hmm. I also have to throw in Jordan Peele and Get Out. And that was a movie that, you know, isn't really connected to Oakland, but it's a Black film that did really well at the box office. And, it was kind of scary, right? Because on one hand, it's pretty surrealistic, but anyone who's Black could watch that film and go like, well, I could believe that could be a documentary. You know, like a lot of that really could be true, right? So I think that in terms of opportunity, We are seeing more opportunity for directors, for actors, for screenwriters from Oakland, and maybe some of those scripts that have been bouncing around a lot. Maybe they'll now land a home. I definitely think, you know, when you have a black movie that takes in $1 billion at the box office, it makes it better for the next, 10 black movies that get pitched. And, the fact that there's a concentration of these films coming out of Oakland has to be good for Oakland. And it has to be good for black filmmakers in Oakland.
Well, with all of the success behind these movies and the spotlight being shown on Oakland now, the concern is that Oakland will become the backdrop of movies and having other filmmaking elements come in rather than in-house art coming from Oakland, to where all of the production crews are from here rather than crews coming from outside into Oakland. What's your take?
I think that goes both ways. I don't think it's bad to have to use the city as a location, and that just happens when you become a city that is desirable to do so. And a lot of times that really comes down to cost. Certain cities are cheaper to shoot in than others. But then people might also want certain Oakland flavor. I mean, if you look at Sorry to Bother You, you can recognize a lot of the backgrounds in there. You're like, hey, that's the club that I was at. And that's the shoe store that I went to. And that's that African restaurant, right? I also think that that creates more opportunities for local crews. I mean, because it's not like people only like parachute in and bring their crews with them. It creates more opportunities for people that work behind the scenes, as grips or engineers or any of the technical jobs that go into film. Some of them already are here, and it just might mean that they don't have to go to L.A. to get work.
We'll talk about Yak Films and its connection to Turf Dancing Culture Sideshow.
Yes. So Yak Films, we were talking about this before, that kind of in the build-up to what we're seeing now, back in early 2000s, mid-2000s, there were all these independent film companies putting out DVDs, shooting local footage. Yak Films is one of them.
Coming out of Oakland.
Yeah, coming out of Oakland. They did a film called Sideways, which was about sideshows. And, love them or hate them, sideshows are a local phenomenon. And they are a part of the indigenous culture of the town. Love them or hate them.
And a sideshow, can you tell people what a sideshow is?
A sideshow is when people block off streets and do basically have rodeos with cars.
Okay.
So there will be, burning of rubber. There will be donuts in the middle of the street. There's potential danger, but they're also very infectious. And then Yak Films went on to do some documentaries about turf dancing and helped popularize the turf fiends. And then the turf fiends got all this, international attention. I think they went to France. And, that's good for the town. That's good for us when our culture gets forwarded. But the point was that this quote-unquote cinematic explosion that we're seeing didn't come out of nowhere. It's been something that's been building. There's like a whole legion of independent filmmakers, independent documentary filmmakers, people with cameras that are out there just producing work that you may or may not have seen, and that you probably, at some point will see.
Do you think that with this new explosion that we will see them?
Well, again, I think it puts more spotlight on Oakland, and I think it gives more resonance to, if you say, I'm a filmmaker from Oakland, now all of a sudden you have some context for that. I think that just overall, any time you have a huge mainstream spotlight come down on a place that is known for developing underground and grassroots culture, it's kind of a weird thing, but it's also a good thing.
And do you see filmmaking as potentially a tool to be used for organization and mobilization?
It could be. I don't think films have to be political. I think that I would rather that they be honest rather than, you know, I don't think if you're not really a political person, I don't think you should try to force that if that's not you. But I also think that, you know, it's hard to separate the political from just the normal or the social, the cultural, the economic, right? All of that, when you add up together, there's politics around every part of that. But yeah, can film be used as a tool for organizing? I think film can be used as a tool to make you think. I don't think that films necessarily should be propaganda. I think they're a good place to weigh ideas and to say, is this a good idea? You know, I mean, that's kind of what happens in Sorry to Bother You, where the whole film is kind of saying, is capitalism really a good idea if it results in X, Y, and Z? And, you know, he's not telling you necessarily to get out there and protest, but he is asking you to think about it.
Well, Eric Arnold, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Janine.
That was Eric Arnold, writer, culture historian, photojournalist, and co-curator of Respect, Hip Hop Style and Wisdom. The hip hop exhibition at the Oakland Museum, running now through August 12th, speaking about the new Oakland film explosion.